You are Locked On 76ers, your daily Philadelphia 76ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome back to Locked On 76ers. I'm your host, Keith Pompey. Happy Wednesday to you. It's Wednesday, May the 15th. I have the round table of our sports team. I don't know what to call this. Are we the Inquirer, Daily News, Philly.com? So I'm just going to say it's the four dudes.
It's definitely the Inquirer.
Remember, yeah, you don't get those
business
emails?
Cards, man. We got new business cards.
Don't you read your email?
I'm only Inquirer. It was Keith who said that, boss.
Me no habla inglés.
That's clear.
But anyway, so look, I got David Murphy, Mark Narducci, and Marcus Hayes in the building. And fellas, we got a lot to talk about today. Yesterday, we had a press conference in regards to Brett Brown spoke, Sixers managing partner Josh Harris spoke, and general manager Elton Brand spoke. So the first thing we're going to talk about in the first segment is Brett Brown. He's retaining his job. We're going to talk about that. It's a little weird because normally you never have a press conference about a guy retaining their job when they're not on the hot seat. So that we'll get into that. But secondly, you know, can this team, if the Sixers bring everyone back, if they bring back the whole starting five, can the 76ers win a championship? Are they built for that? And if so, how come they couldn't win one this year with this starting five? We all know they got bumped in game seven in the second round by Kawhi Leonard and his four bounces that went in at the buzzer in the Toronto Raptors. So, Dave.
Yo.
What was your thoughts on the press conference and about Brett Brown keeping his job?
Well, I think, I think there's a lot of different things. I think number one, regardless of who was coaching this team, I think they would have been hard-pressed to get to an NBA Finals. Now, saying that, we were talking off air, I think Brett Brown saved his own job by getting to Game 7 within four bounces of an overtime of the NBA Finals. I think Brett Brown showed a lot of people something this postseason. I was kind of an agnostic. I didn't think we had seen enough to really know what kind of coach Brett Brown was. But look, man, coming back from Game 1 against Brooklyn and then Game 1 in Toronto, he did everything you would have hoped that a coach could do. And part of the reason why I was agnostic before that, to kind of circle back to the original question, is look, as Marcus has written in the Inquirer and the Daily News and Philly.com, he had a healthy Joel Embiid for, 10 games down the stretch. He had his starting five for 25 games. And I think everyone acknowledged that this team was going to be hard-pressed to win NBA Finals with a bench that does not have a backup center. And does not have a two-way guard coming off the bench. And I think the only right thing really was to go into a year and kind of have this finding out year. Let's assume that they bring Jimmy Butler back, Tobias Harris back. Now you have an offseason where you can go out and get a backup center. You can go out and get, a James Ennis type, hopefully one that can shoot a little bit better. You can add that mid-level extension guy. And then you can see. And if Brett Brown doesn't get it this year, I think, that's it. Because you need someone who's gonna do it. But I think to answer the questions, we're going to find out. I think that it's going to come down to Brett Brown. It's going to come down to whether Joel Embiid is healthy. And for however healthy he isn't, it's going to come down to Ben Simmons needing to do more on the offensive end.
All right. So Mark, what are your thoughts in regards to this whole thing? Because it just seems like a bizarre situation. I know Marcus is going to tackle it, but, your impressions. I mean, because the whole thing, I get what Dave said, and he said some great things.
What did
things.
I say? I don't really get it. I don't know if I get what I said.
Me no habla inglés. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, Keith, as everyone knows, the Sixers have a lot of voices in their decision-making that go well beyond Josh Harris and people who have Josh Harris's ear. To suggest that there was never a thought of Brett Brown's job security, I'm not sure that is true at all. I think there was some doubt. I certainly think if they didn't get the game six, he could have really been in trouble. But I also think the fact that he has so much money left on his contract, what is it, about $15 million in his extension?
That's Mark Narducci money.
Yeah, I think that certainly had a factor in it all. So, but just to suggest today that there was never a question about Brett coming back, I didn't quite believe that.
Yeah, that's what they call a lie.
this is Marcus Hayes speaking, everyone.
If we're gonna, you know, in the Trump era, we need to count the lies, not the mistruths. Murphy and I were talking about this before we came on the pod. If at 11:15, the Sixers are going to let ESPN know that Brett Brown is not going to be fired, after 4 weeks of speculation about whether Brett Brown needed to advance to the third round to save his job, that admits that the team understood that there was speculation and that there was a question. And then for Josh Harris to assert that there was never a question about Brett Brown being fired if they didn't beat the Raptors, that's a lie, because the team doesn't need to let anybody know that the perception is not true, that Brett Brown will be retained, unless there's a chance he's not going to be retained. And they can say, well, our policy was not to address the rumor. Well, they addressed the rumor. If they didn't address the rumor, ESPN wouldn't have known, ESPN wouldn't have had to tweet it, and all they would have done is had a press conference today with the coach, who has 3 more years on his deal, as opposed to, you know, endorsing the coach's wonderful job today. I mean, I'm not a smart man, Jenny, but I know what love is. I mean, to treat us like we're this stupid is insulting, and it's disingenuous, and it's not necessary, because the managing partner / owner Josh Harris had every opportunity to knock these rumors down during the playoffs. And he said what he said beforehand. And yes, what he said was rather nebulous. He never came out and said, I'm going to fire Brett Brown if we don't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. But he didn't not say that either. He left room for interpretation. He knew what the interpretation was going to be. And all this garbage from today, you know, the reality isn't what the reality is. Don't gaslight me. You know, don't play me like that. It's insulting.
Now, in fairness, Brett Brown then lied too.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you would lie too if you had something to do with it.
I guess my thing is, like, I just assume everyone's always lying to me, so I don't really.
I think you're lying.
That's kind of my operating premise. I'm actually a really bad liar.
Yeah, you are. You have to care to lie.
Exactly. Yeah.
What do you think, Keith? You've been knee deep.
So here's the thing. My thing, just to say, like it's just fun. It's almost funny. It's like this is one of those situations where you could almost diagram it out on a whiteboard, like using like formal logic, mm-hmm. and it's like self-evidently not an untruth, because it's not just that they came out and said. Except they did it at 11:15 at the night by leaking it to the national guy who gets all the scoops, right. You know, like you said, if you can't say it's almost humorous to act like, oh, well, there's no story. This was always blown out of proportion. But then to like at 11:15 at night, go out of your way to leak this as if it was a story. The way to handle it is if the reality that they were claiming during the press conference was actually reality, they would have, assuming these are rational actors, they would have pretended like everything was normal the same way they did last year. They would have had a press conference, and when people started asking about Brett Brown, they would have been like, what are you guys talking about? He was always our coach, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you're right. And here's the thing, like, I mean, if you want to hold their words against them, this is what you say. So yesterday, no one knew when the press conference was going to be. You know, they just said, oh, yeah, Elton's going to speak first, and then we'll come back with Brett. We assume it's going to be such and such time. But they waited until after the Woj report came out to send a press release. You know, now Brett Brown hops in the car service and goes up there and meets with the owner. And he doesn't get back until his house until 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm assuming what happened is he exits an interview with the owner, a meeting with the owner and the general manager, and then they decide, like, hey, he's going to stay. And the first person they call is Woj. Mm. You know, and Woj is a great reporter. I mean, I'm going to give him that. But what I'm saying is when you add up the time of everything, element, it's obvious what happened.
They initially issued a press release through the NBA's press release agent, Woj. They knew that telling Woj this no matter what time, it would get more traction than them, you know, issuing a formal press release, which they couldn't do. But if they leaked it to Woj, it's going to amplify it the most.
I don't have a problem. I mean, with Woj. I mean, I know he's a great reporter, but
it's not him; it's them.
Yeah, all I'm saying is, I'm just saying the timeline that everything happened. That's the timeline. Like, you know, how they do it. Now, the problem is, right now, it's kind of like you said, a liar. They look bad, in my opinion, because you got most, like, if anybody in their right mind knows that this coach was on a hot seat and they're trying to walk it back. Now, I think they may have been better if they would have came out and said, look, y'all, this is how it is. We got a champion. We're going to talk about this in the next segment. But we have what we believe is a championship caliber team, and we feel like we need the right person to lead the team. And guess what? We were disappointed with some of the things that Brett Brown did. However, to Brett Brown's defense, he had to coach three different rosters, right? Basically, you know, he made some hell of a moves in the playoff series, and we feel like that we got to give him a chance. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. The questions that I have is, you know, there are certain coaches out there who basically got jobs that you feel like, and I'm not talking about Monty Williams. Monty Williams, I feel like, is a great coach, and Monty Williams could have stepped in. But there are certain guys that got jobs, and you're saying yourself, like, wow, there's not really a lot of coaches out there. So if you get someone, it has to be someone better than Brett Brown. So that's my opinion. Now, the thing is, it just looks bad in the organization. Am I surprised? No. And you feel sorry for some people who are in the PR staff, because what they're trying to do now is they're covering things up, and they're trying to make you feel like you don't know what you're talking about, when we all know that Brett Brown was going to be fired. I mean, that's it. But what happened is he saved his job, regardless if it was after game six, regardless if it was the four bounces. But it's one of those things where, you know, it just is another knock to me on the organization, because people from the outside are looking at it like, yo, you guys aren't telling the truth.
Hey, man, I can't believe that you're questioning an organization whose general manager this time last year was ripping the players with ghost Twitter accounts, and the previous general manager was MIA when they were suspending the star player for two games in New York, which led to his ultimate demise. I mean, this is clearly a well-run machine, right? A well-oiled machine. They don't do anything wrong except everything. But anyway.
That's Marcus Hayes, people. It's like, what are you playing?
But no. At the same time, it doesn't really matter, right? No.
The one thing is, maybe it also came to the conclusion that as much as they've said they're a championship team, Eastern Conference Finals, they weren't better than Toronto. They're not better than Milwaukee. And I think maybe they've over evaluated what they have. Can they be a contender? Absolutely. But I don't think they're better than those teams, especially when Toronto's superstar was so much better than their stars.
All right, well, I guess Mark is kind of leading us into the second segment, so we already know what you feel. You feel like it. Marcus, do you feel as if, when we get back from this commercial break, do you believe that the Sixers have a championship-caliber team? If you do, I mean, if you don't, then we'll break it down in the third segment, but right now, tell me if you think that, tell me if you believe they have a championship caliber team.
Not as the way they are comprised, for two reasons. Number one, Joel Embiid is not a force in the post. The comparisons to Hakeem Olajuwon are flawed, because Hakeem Olajuwon came to the NBA with more post game than Joel Embiid has five years into the NBA. That's why they don't use him in the post, not because they need to space the floor. Number two, their point guard can't shoot, and he needs to shoot. Not only can he not shoot, he's scared to shoot, and he's scared to go to the free throw line. Those are two fundamental flaws. They'll never win anything until those two things change.
What about you, Dave?
I don't know. I think we're going to find out. You know, I think I think this team would be well served to get more of a two-way guard than J.J. Redick as a starter. I think J.J. would be fine coming off the bench. But I think that it's all going to depend on what happens with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons' development. I wrote this after Game 7. Wrote this after Game 6. We've all written it. You know, when Joel Embiid plays the way he played in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference semifinals, yes, the Sixers are a championship contender, regardless of whether Ben Simmons makes a lick of improvement on the offensive end of the court. Because Joel Embiid is that dominant, and you can easily build a team of veteran minimum depth pieces, mid-level extension guys, or exception guys. You can easily build a competent team around him. The question is, can he be that guy? Can you count on him each postseason? And that's what we're going to find out. But if he remains what he is for the rest of his career, then yes, they can still become a championship team if Ben Simmons continues to improve on the offensive end and makes teams respect him outside of the paint. And I just don't know that we know the answers to those, and I don't know that we can answer the questions, you know?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I think that, you know, they could become a championship caliber team, but it's one of those things where they have to utilize what they have. I mean, there are so many times when we see them, you feel like, you know, okay, this guy is hot, but then they go away from that person, mm-hmm. you know? But when you look at the talent level that they have, you know, they do have it. It's just that, you know, guys have to buy in and they have to be. And I'm not saying they all have high basketball IQs, but it's one of those things where you have to know who's hot. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like to me that it got a point where I felt like even though everyone says it, they all say that, nah, we're buying in. They look like a bunch of guys who were in the final year of their deal trying to get paid. Mm. And it was at points and times, it looked like they were competing against each other than they were playing together. And that's part of the problem.
The other thing is, again, I thought this year they were a contender, but to suggest that they were a favorite or anything like that, I think is really flawed. The other thing is, I know they had some success in the playoffs with Jimmy handling the ball a little bit, but I think when he handles the ball, it monopolizes it too much. I still think in the long range, they're going to be a better team if Ben Simmons is not afraid to go all the way to the basket and Ben Simmons does the bulk of the ball handling.
Yeah, I agree. Now, look, so we talked a little bit about it, but let's go really in depth about what we think has to happen. Moving forward in order for them to do it. Now, I know you said Ben has to do some of the ball handling, but I'm just going to give you some of my impressions of what the 76ers need when we get right back. All right, so listen, I touched on it a little bit, but I'm just going to give Game 7 as an example. So the Sixers were struggling. Joel and Jimmy were struggling in the first half of Game 7, right? We all know that. It seems like Tobias was the hot hand. And in the second half, it seems like they went away from that. You know what I mean? And then you saw it. And then in the fourth quarter, the game turned into a comedy show of errors. Like they were forcing things, but you always felt like the guys who were hot never got the ball. And what I meant by they looked like a team of guys in the final year of their contract, it's like when the going got rough for the Sixers, more often than not, they always made mistakes and guys always did some things. They were coming out of timeouts getting 24-second violations. You can't do that, man. You just can't. And so when you look at this team, you know, like you said, Ben Simmons needs to handle the ball, but they also need a backup point guard. So TJ McConnell, would he would have helped them? Who knows? But at the same time, to me, that's a need. You need someone. As good as Jimmy Butler is, he's a shooting guard, small forward at best. He's not a point guard. So when he makes mistakes, it's hard for me to blame him because he's not a point guard. So they need a point guard. They need a backup big, right? And they need a bench. Now, they have a lot of things. Now, here's the one thing. You can bring all five starters back. But if you're going to max a guy out, because they're probably going to have to max Jimmy and Tobias out, Tobias and Jimmy ain't trying to come back here to be the third or fourth option. I mean, they could go elsewhere and get a four-year max. So you have to have a game plan to incorporate all these guys. Because everyone on exit interviews, we all know, they all praise the coach. They all praise the organization. But I believe me, when they get back home, the conversation with their people tend to be a little different.
You know, I thought it was truly interesting on Monday that both Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris didn't say what a lot of people usually like to say. Oh, it'd be great to come back here. It'd be great. Both of them talked about looking at roles, looking at the whole situation and everything like that. And I'm not sure it's a slam dunk they get both of them, but you would think they would get at least one of them. But I think it's going to be very interesting this offseason.
Yeah, I think it's 50-50 right now if Jimmy comes back. You know, I think Tobias is coming. I think they love Tobias. I think you heard that in Brett Brown's voice today when somebody asked him if Tobias fits. Tobias fits everywhere. He's a guy who has a very smooth game, very incorporable game, needs to get better at the catch and shoot. But frankly, he needs to get better at his ball handling. But frankly, he does, you know, Jimmy's a tough guy to put into this offense because, as you noted, he kind of swallows the ball, and there is not a ton of ball movement when he's around. It's kind of him. That's always been who he is. I don't know that Ben was thrilled with I think Ben, as much as he likes to defer, you know, call the point guard decision a coaching decision, I think he really likes having the ball in his hands. I think that's why this Jimmy thing didn't happen until, you know, the playoffs when it was absolutely necessary. So Jimmy, again, I think Jimmy talked more than anything about his family, the team around him. He's from from Texas, but lives in Southern California. I think there's every reason to think that it would be wiser for both parties to maybe part ways. I don't know that it would prove to have been a bad move, even if they do part ways.
Dave, I agree with you. And the thing about Tobias, when you looked at how successful he was at 6'9", they were able to match him up shooting against smaller right. people. And he did that very well. He did it off the dribble very well. I'm with you. If I had my choice and had to go with one of the two, I would go with Tobias instead.
Especially when you consider – now, I asked Brett Brown this at the press conference today. If you do lose Jimmy, I think the one thing that we learned this postseason, when Jimmy had the ball in his hands, and frankly may have been obvious to everyone going back to last year, they need someone – to be another ball handling option next to Ben Simmons. And I think they even understood that when they drafted Markelle Fultz and traded up for him. And I think that's the role that he was supposed to. Now, we all know how that played out. And frankly, even Jimmy, I don't think, was the perfect fit, because Brett also said, Brett responded, I asked him if you thought he needed that role. And he said yes, definitively. He said ideally he would be able to shoot a little too. And I think that's where Jimmy's not the perfect fit for this offense, because while he does clearly have that mentality, he's a closer more than anybody else. You're probably not going to get someone better in isolation when the game's on the line in free agency. But, you know, his reluctance to shoot and frankly just his mediocre shot, that's not an ideal fit for this offense. But how it relates to Tobias Harris is that, you know, we saw a lot of times during the regular season Tobias running some of the same stuff that Jimmy was running, with the middle pick and rolls. And I think the pull-up game is something that Tobias likes a lot. He likes being able to, you know, move in space and get in the paint. And he just wasn't able to do as much of that when Jimmy had the ball in his hand. So I think that, yeah, when you're looking at it, I mean, if you're talking about bringing Tobias back put this way, if you don't re-sign Jimmy, you could theoretically go out and get a guy like, I don't know, Tyreke Evans last year, you know, and then bring JJ back off the bench, you know, or even you could bring, I guess, wait, what am I thinking here? If you bring Tyreke Evans in and a Trevor Ariza, then you might even have money to bring a JJ off the bench, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that. You know, I think one of the problems with this team is having Tobias and JJ on the court at the same time from their defensive end too. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different ways they can go, and frankly, it would not surprise me at all if the the kind of puzzle piece that needs to shift is Jimmy Butler not coming back.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing that I'll talk about, and, you know, the thing that I think that they need to work on, and I know Brett kept saying it and he brings it up and he always talks about culture. Mm-hmm. I think they need to improve the culture. And here's my, like, whenever people talk about culture, they're always talking about the practice facility and they're comparing it to PCOM. Well, most NBA teams have great practice facilities. Most NBA teams have nutritionists.
Right.
You know, most NBA teams, everything that Brett Brown was saying, and I'm not knocking him, but everything he was talking about, that's the norm nowadays. Mm-hmm. Now, when I think of culture, I think of, you know, your best player. There's a concern that he's going to be able to log a lot of minutes in the most important game of the season. Mm-hmm. Whenever your best player gets injured, he comes back 10 pounds heavier. You know, when you have a guy who's your point guard who doesn't want to shoot the ball. You know, my thing is a culture is you have to start making these guys accountable for their things. And I believe we can talk about Ross, because, like, these two guys are going to stay. Mm-hmm. They're going to stay. And as long as Jimmy Butler could come, Tobias Harris could come. But it all starts with Joel. If Joel Embiid is allowed to do things, and next thing you know, people are like, well, hey, Joel didn't have to do it, so I'm going to follow Joel. And Joel needs to know, and they all need to recognize that they have to be more accountable for their actions. And I think that, as I know this sounds crazy because it may be too far gone now, but you cannot not reprimand someone when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. So until you step up and you hold these guys accountable and discipline them, you're not winning a championship.
You know, it's interesting. They've lived through this too. 2 years ago, two football seasons ago, after two players on the Eagles declined to be involved in contact situations against Cincinnati Bengals, Doug Peterson said, you know, we need more out of those guys. And the guys revolted. And Doug Peterson's response was, okay, you guys police yourselves. Like, 14 months later, they were Super Bowl champions because they policed themselves. Great teams police themselves. To your point, Keith, they need leadership, you know, from the coaches, but especially from the players who need to hold each other accountable. Brett Brown shouldn't be telling Ben Simmons to shoot. Joel Embiid should be telling Ben Simmons to shoot.
Somebody needs to tell someone because no one's getting it.
But here's the thing, though. Leadership, when you have it, it has to come from your main superstar. You think Toronto was worried about Kawhi Leonard and his habits and everything like that? He just played and people followed him. Until Embiid takes it another level in that area, in the maturity level, they're going to continue to have problems.
I agree.
You agree? Well, look, y'all, I want to thank y'all for listening. I want to thank you guys for doing this podcast. And hopefully we'll get the crew together soon. But this is the end of the season, and Marcus doesn't like us. So, look, all right, y'all. Peace.